I would like to begin our discussion today with a passage, and we've been there often, Ephesians chapter 5, but I haven't keyed on this particular verse, and I would like to use that to key on this morning. We'll wait just a little bit and get... Ephesians chapter 5, verses 28, but 29 is the one I really want to begin on, or I want to key on. Okay, in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 28, we have the passage that a man ought to love his wife as himself, or as his own body. And he that loveth his wife, loveth himself. In verse 29 it says, For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. The word I wanted to key on were the words nourish and cherish. In that passage, a man is admonished to nourish and to cherish. And I don't think we're taking any liberty with the scripture, because there are other scriptures would indicate that a woman would need to or want to do the same thing in a marriage, to nourish and cherish her husband. Now, yesterday we went over some differences. We didn't go over all of the differences. I was really trying to make a point that we understand that there are differences that affect a relationship between a man and a woman. And Leah asked a question yesterday in our QA session about, okay, now we understand those differences, what do we do about that, and how do we put this to use? And that's really what I want to talk about this morning. Okay, we have differences. We are different. Now what do we do about that? Sometimes I'll be talking to the wives, sometimes I'll be talking to the husbands, and I think there's some cross benefit we can get from these, so listen if I'm not talking to you, because there might be something you would glean out of that. I believe there are several things essential to a good marriage, but probably the very essence of it is we need to roll up our sleeves. Because good marriages and good families don't happen. They take work. And I am persuaded that a lot of families fail and a lot of marriages fail simply because we're too lazy to make them work. A lot of children don't have good parents because we're too lazy to put the work in that it takes to be good parents. So rolling up our sleeves. And I'm going to give you three things that I think will go a long way toward ensuring a successful family and a successful marriage. Number one, commitment to making it work. Number two, commitment to making it work. Number three, commitment to making it work. Now, I'm fully aware it takes two to make a marriage. And it is multiple people involved in a family. And some of you have found yourselves in a painful situation of being committed to a relationship that the other person wasn't committed to. And I can sympathize with you, but I can't empathize with you because I've never gone through that. But I want us to be very careful that we don't take an out here that's not appropriate. And don't give it our best effort. There are several keys to life, but I want to touch on four keys to life and five keys to a successful family and a successful marriage this morning. I talked a little bit yesterday about how we should honor our mate, and I was just sitting there listening as you were giving Bill and Marvin some input earlier, and I think the word may have been used, but the concept was used repeatedly. about showing appreciation for our mates. Now, you remember one of the differences yesterday I talked about between men and women is that men tend to be oriented toward finding solutions. Women tend to be a little bit more oriented towards sympathy and compassion. Wives, honor your husband's ability to make decisions. God made him with the capacity to do that. And I hope all of you wives have husbands that exercise that capacity. I suspect in a group this size, some of you are married to men who don't exercise that capacity. But if you're if you're married to a man who has the ability to make decisions, especially if he makes those decisions in light of the Scriptures, you should honor that and appreciate it. Because that will go further toward getting him to do it more frequently and more diligently. Men, if you are married to women who have the capacity to sympathize and be compassionate, we should honor that, even though we don't always understand how they can be sympathetic in certain situations. Oftentimes, the average husband doesn't really address his wife's feelings and emotions the way she would like for him to do. Most of us as husbands are fairly good about remembering Valentine's Day and reasonably good about remembering birthdays. But beyond that, we're woefully pathetic. But there's two sides to that coin. Wives, how do you react if your husband happens to send you flowers and there's no occasion? I remember one man, the story went, he sent his wife flowers from the office, and it wasn't her birthday and it wasn't Valentine's. He got home, walked in the front door, and the first words out of her mouth is, "What have you done now?" Rather than, "Thank you for expressing your love and appreciation." I mentioned yesterday that some wives think that their husbands just lay in bed at night trying to think of ways to irritate them. That's not true. It just comes natural to us. We don't have to give it any thought. It's just a natural thing that God's given us. One of a woman's greatest strengths is her desire for a strong relationship. And one of a man's greatest strengths is his ability that God has made him in order to lead and make decisions. Therefore, I think that explains partially why in Ephesians chapter 5, it tells the wife to submit or follow her husband, because God has given him some ability to make decisions. That's that left brain. But then a husband is to love his wife as Christ loved the church, because his wife craves that relational aspect. So in that passage, God is saying, husbands, give your wives what they crave most, that relational love. And wives, give your husband what they can provide for you, that following and submission to their godly decisions. Now, that's often hard to do, even though it's easy to say. I don't know where this came from. I don't think it's part of the exhibit up here, so it was just laying on the table. But I'm going to borrow it for just a second, because I want to talk about the keys to life and the keys to relationship. Now, my assignment is to focus this on marriage and the family, but I think you could take this into the church. Our relationship, brothers and sisters in Christ. Now, this is not a real plant, but if it were real, that plant needs four things to grow. It needs light. It needs water. It needs nutrients. And it needs air. As long as that plant has those four things, it's going to flourish. The same thing is true in relationships. Our relationships need four things in order to flourish. And I'm going to talk about them, and then we'll pause and let you make some comments. And I'm going to take those four things that I just described for the plant and then try to make a corollary for our relationships. The plant needs light. For you to have a successful family and a successful marriage, you need security. It is absolutely impossible for a marriage or a family to thrive in any way, in my opinion, but certainly in a godly way, unless there is security. And by security, I mean knowing that someone is committed to you and they're going to be with you no matter what. We all need that, especially in a marriage. Now, I could say women need that more than men, but I'm not going to say it because I don't believe it. They show the need for that and express the need for that differently, but men need it every bit as much as women, and maybe more, depending upon the couple, because we're all basically insecure. When a husband and wife are having a problem, having an argument, even though we would like to say that never happens, it does. One of the worst things that can be said, and ladies usually are the ones that say this, but not always, is the phrase, "I'm going to leave if things don't change." Now, that may be how you feel, and that may be how the person you are married to, that may be what they deserve. But I want you to pause and think that when those words come out of your mouth, what that does to the need of security in your mate. You have just pulled the rug out from under him or her. Now, are there ever times when it's appropriate to leave? Maybe, but they're few and they're rare. One area where I can see it might be is if there is physical danger to one of the spouses. Usually that physical danger is to the woman, but I have seen marriages where I thought the man was in physical danger. And I don't think God intends for us to get our heads battered in. And I get this question often when it comes to spousal abuse. But I believe the times when it's appropriate or beneficial for one of the two to leave, I mean physically leave, go back to mom, get a hotel, whatever, is few and far between, and you think that through long and hard before you do that, because it will have a lasting impact on your marriage and on your family. Security is like sunlight. The more secure we are, the more we grow and the more we flourish. And as a husband or a wife, one of your main jobs in that relationship is to make your mate feel secure in your love and commitment to them. And if you trifle with that, you're going to pay a high price. The second one that I indicated for the plant was water, and I'm just going to liken that to communication. And it was amazing to me, although not surprising, how many times that came up in Marvin's exercise this morning, communicating. Now, usually in a home, it's the woman who's the primary communicator. And that goes back to the usage of verbal words that I talked about yesterday. She may not be the most effective communicator, but she's usually the most frequent communicator. And in general, women are more verbally skilled than men. I don't understand what that is unless it's just practice. But in general, women are more verbally skilled than men. Studies have shown that the average marriage needs 1 hour of communication a day at a minimum. That means the husband and wife, now this is an average, need to talk or, they need to communicate a minimum of 1 hour a day. Now that doesn't mean you have to sit down for one solid hour and talk. You can do this in 1, 2, 3 minute increments. And as was said this morning, not all communication is verbal. In fact, probably the case can be made that most communication is not verbal and the most meaningful communication is not verbal. And husbands, don't set a stopwatch. And if it gets to be 9 o'clock at night and you've only communicated for 20 minutes, don't feel you've got to sit down for 40 because that's contrived. But I think you understand the need for this. Now let me make a comment to the women that at least I feel strongly about. You women can discourage men, your husbands in particular, with your nonverbal communication in ways that are almost impossible to heal over. The average woman can make 250,000 facial expressions. And those facial expressions can absolutely devastate a man. You don't even have to say a word. I can remember many times I've been talking to a man about a serious subject and his wife would be standing behind him where he couldn't see and she would be making some of the most grotesque facial distortions I ever saw and she was dishonoring that man. Absolutely dishonoring him. Now, I don't know your situations, but I have observed a man gets up to do something in the public service and maybe it's not his greatest talent. And his wife is really embarrassed by this and she goes through all kinds of contortions. And I wish that were funny, but it's not. It's dishonoring. Now, I'm not saying men can't do this too. I've just observed women doing it more frequently than men. Be very careful, ladies, about your facial communications. Because men and women communicate differently. Another thing that I'd like for us to all understand, and maybe we men need this more than the women, but I think we all need it, is we all need praise and encouragement. And this area of communication is a key thing for that. Wives, praise your husbands because God gave them an ego and it needs to be stroked. That's just a fact. And if you don't stroke it, somebody else will. And if you don't stroke it, they'll find somebody else who will. And study after study has shown that most affairs that men enter into are not because they found someone prettier than their wife. It's because they found someone who made them feel good about themselves when their wife didn't. Now, I could turn that around, and we men need to also praise our wives. But it seems to me like men may need this a little bit more. Now, I don't want us to get into a manipulation. And, you know, if all you husbands and wives praise each other at lunch, you're going to say, oh, that John put them up to that. You know, let it cool off for a week or two and then do it, you know. But just remember it. Just remember it. We are very sensitive to praise. And those of us who say we aren't are probably the ones who need it the most. Now, when someone praises me, if you're like me, I find that embarrassing. And I like to change the subject. I really don't. There's a part of me that doesn't want to hear it, but yet I eat every word up and I remember it for eternity. So I'm in a dichotomy, and you may be in the same dichotomy. Make it succinct. But do it. Praise by word is very powerful. I forget, it was one of the Ivy League schools, and it was in a psychology class, and the professor, I believe this to be a true story. The professor was lecturing, but the students got their heads together and they decided they were going to do a little experiment with their professor rather than just have him teach them. So in this room, there was the windows were over here, and there was a radiator, a heating radiator, on the other side of the room. And the students said, what we're going to do is when the professor, and he was one that would move around as he lectured, when the professor moves toward the window, everybody act bored and like you're not listening. And then when the professor moves toward the radiator, everybody just take notes frantically. So this class did that for several days, and it seemed to be having some interesting results, and it went on for about 2 weeks. At the end of 2 weeks, that professor was sitting on the radiator for the entire lecture. Now, he had no idea what had happened to him, but he was responding to praise. And we all do that in some way or shape or form. When I'm up here speaking to you, when I think you're not tracking with me, I try something different. When I think you're tracking with me, I keep kind of in the same mode I am. And anyone that's had any experience presenting or in any facet of life, we're like that. Husbands, if you like the way your wife's taking care of the home, give her some positive reinforcement. Now, I know that's basic, but we just forget to do this. We just forget to do it. Number three, nutrients, and I'm going to liken that to emotional support. Emotional or romantic. And by romantic and emotional, I'm not talking sexual. We'll get to that in number four. But this is that. And guys, hang on, because I know this sends a chill up our spines. This is that candlelight dinner. This is setting out on the patio in the sun and getting sunburned. It's doing things that especially are very relationally important to our wives. And most of us men also enjoy those things. We're just not as plugged into them. Someone mentioned, I think it was Marvin, talking about Brother and Sister Acre holding hands after 60 years of marriage. That's emotional support, and both need that. It's putting your arm around your wife when you've got an option. I mean, when you're scrunched into a car and there's four people in the back seat, that doesn't count because you don't have any choice. I'm talking about doing it when you got an option. Those things are extremely important. Now, each couple is different, and I don't have a list of things that you and your wife or husband should do. I just know that each couple needs those things. And it's very easy, especially for those of us that are engrossed in church work, to get so engrossed in solving other people's problems that we forget to take care of things at home. And you may have to remind some of us of that. But if you leave this out, just like this plant's going to die if it doesn't have nutrients, your relationship is also going to die. The fourth one is physical support. And by physical support, I am now talking about the sexual aspect of a relationship or of a marriage. Touch is the main physical support of a home. Whether it's children or your husband or your wife. Children who grow up in a home where they're seldom hugged usually grow up to be in some way emotionally and spiritually retarded because they simply can't respond to love the way God intended them to do. Study after study has shown that most prostitutes or most young girls who engage in promiscuous activity come from homes where the father and mother didn't touch and hug and show some kind of physical appreciation. Now, there are exceptions to that, but time and time again, people will get a low self-esteem and literally go looking for love in all the wrong places, and it's not love they're looking for, it's lust or physical attraction. But this is one area where we need to understand that men and women are different. Now in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, I believe it's in, well, let's turn to that because it's an important verse. I wanted to say verse 4, but it might be just a little after that. Yes, it is verse 4 and 5. I'm going to read that. You know it, but I'm going to read it.
You say chapter 7?
1 Corinthians chapter 7, I'm going to be looking at verses 4 and 5. For the wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband, and likewise also the husband, hath not power of his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one another, except it be with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinence. Now, I think you know what those verses mean, but I'm not going to leave here today with any doubt in my mind that you've been told. Those indicate that in a husband and wife relationship, the husband and the wife have a sexual responsibility to each other. And it is a sin, I believe, at a minimum it's unwise, but I don't think it's too strong to say it is a sin to withhold that in a husband and wife relationship. Now this verse 5 does indicate that there might be a time when a husband and wife would mutually agree to abstain for a short period of time so that they could focus more definitely on spiritual things, but if that occurs, I want to underline short. Now, what short is depends upon the couple, but there is oftentimes a tendency for a wife to use sexual intimacy as a leverage point with her husband, and there's a word for a wife like that. It's called a fool, because more times than not, that husband will eventually begin to look for it in all the wrong places. And that's why God put it in here. Now, husbands, we need to be considerate of our wives. And it seems to me like a mature marriage is when this occurs under mutual consent, under mutual timing, because there might be a reason why this isn't the right time. You understand that. I understand that. But the point we're making is, this is, even though it's an area that we don't often discuss, I'm going to discuss it with the young people this afternoon because they need to know it. I may couch it slightly different than I'm couching it with you, but I'm sure not going to avoid it because you might as well understand, they understand more than sometimes you and I understand about these subjects. And they appreciate somebody shooting straight with them, and that's what I'm going to try to do. Now, there are differences sexually between men and women, not just the anatomy, but also the emotions. Studies have indicated that the average male has a sexual thought every 55 seconds. Now, I don't know if that's true, but I suspect it is true that the average male has a lot more sexual thoughts than the average female in a physical sense. That's just the way we were made. We've got all this testosterone flowing through our blood. It's there for some reason, and that's one of the reasons it's there. And I don't think that's wrong. Now, we could dwell on that to the point that it became lusting after a woman, and that's wrong. The old adage, we can't always control what bird flies over our head, but we can control which ones build nests. And that's something that we men need to be very, very aware of. But men, if you have sexual thoughts, don't feel like your Satan's got a hold of you. You may be married, but you're not dead. But yet, control is an important part of this. Now, I believe women also have sexual thoughts, but I'm not a woman, so I can't validate that quite as well as I can validate men, but they must. There's sometimes a myth that I tend to reject, and that is men enjoy sex and women don't. That must not be true. I hope that's not true. But there are differences. There are differences. One man wrote, and I've always thought this was a pretty good way of saying it. He said, sexually, women are like crock pots. It takes a while for them to warm up. But men are like microwaves. All you have to do is push the button and they're ready to go. Now, I hope you don't take that in a flippant manner, but I believe it to be true. And a lot of marriages have problems, especially as they're beginning, because young people just don't understand that difference. They just don't understand that difference, and then that leads them not to be patient and understanding one with another. Another man wrote regarding sexuality, a man needs a place, but a woman needs a reason. And I think that's probably true in many cases. Of these four things, women tend to extol security, communication, and romance first, and then sexuality as number four, in general.
Would you repeat that, please?
Women tend to place the first three, security, communication, and romance, ahead of sexuality, in terms of their needs in a relationship. Most men, and I think as we mature in the Christian faith, this changes, but most men probably put them in the reverse order, at least initially. Now, this is very personal. Not, I mean personal for all of us, but I just want to make a comment. If you are married, or you are counseling or know of a couple that are having difficulties in this area of sexuality, the chances are very strong that the problem lies because there's a lack of security, a lack of communication, or a lack of emotional support. Most sexual problems have their basis in the first three. And that's probably a good place for us to begin looking. 80% of a woman's need physically is simply touch. Husbands, when you hold your wife's hand or touch their arm, that means so much more to them than it does to you. And it doesn't mean something to you. They're just built that way. And it's a tremendous way to strengthen the relationship. Now let me touch on number five, which really doesn't fit our plan anymore. And that's the area of spirituality. Men and women in the marriage need to have spiritual oneness. Yes, we need security. Yes, we need communication. Yes, we need emotional support. And yes, we need physical support. But I think as Christians, we all understand that need for spirituality. The need to be one. The need to have Christ, and it's been erased, but remember my slanted chair. The need to have Christ as number one in the family. And when Christ is number one in the family, then not only do you and I not suffer, we're elevated, pulled along with Him. And successful marriages to reach their potential need this spiritual oneness. Now, some of you are married to people that aren't Christians, I know. And I believe you can have a good marriage. And Scripture teaches us that God doesn't want you to leave your mate simply because they're not a Christian. You're to be a good husband and a good wife to them. But having said that, I do believe that when we are not married to someone who shares our faith, we can never reach quite the level of potential that God had in mind for us. And I don't say that to discourage anyone that's not a Christian, that is married to someone that's not a Christian. It just is to encourage us to continue to be a good example, and maybe someday that will happen. Now, two Christians being married doesn't solve all problems, but it does seem to lower the hurdles that we have to jump over. Now, let me pause for a couple of minutes and see if you have any comments or questions on anything I've said before I go into another area. Joanne.
You said that.
Real loud.
You said that. You said that the scripture in 1 Corinthians 7 is a sin to do, but yet it's not a commandment. Can you explain how?
Did I say it wasn't a commandment? Or are you asking if it's a commandment?
The scripture says it's not a commandment. Paul says that this is not a commandment that he's given. It's just a confession.
Where does he say that, Joanne? I said I personally think it is a sin, but at a minimum, I think it's terribly unwise.
But in verse 6, are you referring to verse 7?
Yes.
But there's a reference in 2 Corinthians 8:8 that also reiterates that it is not a commandment.
In what?
2 Corinthians 8:8.
Okay. Well, is this on this issue?
Yes.
Okay.
Should a woman be trapped in a marriage for this one reason alone? If everything else in the marriage is gone, should that keep it?
Well, just a minute. Let me deal with this one, because that's the same umbrella, but it's not the same question.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I'm not tracking with you. I see 2 Corinthians 8:8. I'm just not tracking with how that ties into to the one we had. Maybe I'm missing it. He uses that phrase in 2 Corinthians 8:8, but it's a different text, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a different. Okay, it's a different text. I believe back into 1 Corinthians 7 and 6, what he's referring to there is his admonition in verse 7 where he says, I wish you could all remain unmarried, but if you can't, then I understand. He's saying, I don't command you not to get married. I think that this is not a commandment. It doesn't refer to verses 4 and 5. It refers to verse 7. Okay, I say okay, then I understand your comment. I'm not commenting on your comment. Okay, and I don't mean that to be flippant. That's a whole different that's an important issue, but it's not our issue. Joanne, do you understand my position on that?
Yeah.
I take verses 4 and 5 as a commandment, but I don't take verse 7. I believe that's he's saying, now I'm going to give you verse 7, that if you don't get married, that's good, but that's not a commandment. And that can't be a commandment, because if everyone obeyed that commandment, we wouldn't have any elders or deacons. So Paul would be contradicting himself. Dean?
I was just going to comment on this section in 1 Corinthians 7 that, yeah, you really need to read it carefully, because verse 6 says, I say this, not as a command. Verse 10 says, I give this command, not I, but the Lord. Verse 12 says, I say this, I, not the Lord. So you need to read it really carefully.
You need to read it very carefully, but I would admonish us not to take those phrases, I say and not the Lord, to mean that that's not inspired. I believe the 7th chapter of 1 Corinthians is inspired. What Paul is saying, I believe, is Jesus already covered some of these things in his teachings, and Paul, with the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, is giving them additional teachings. But don't take those phrases when Paul says, I say and not the Lord, to mean it's not binding, because I think that's, you're just opening the floodgates of hell when you do that, in my opinion. And we want to open this floodgate so much because this marriage, divorce, and all this is a real problem for most of many families. But I caution us against that. Now, I owe Lee his question, so ask that again. Yes.
If everything else about the marriage is out the window, should this hold them together?
Well, it depends how you define everything else as out the window, but let me give you a brief statement. We'll talk more about this next week.
John, could you repeat the question?
His question is, if everything in a marriage is kaput, except for this?
Well, if the wife feels or if the husband feels that they would be sinning if they separated or whatever.
Okay. It shouldn't be the only thing, but if that's all there is, that's enough. I don't believe marriages can be dissolved except for one reason, with the right to remarry. That's what makes this whole thing so serious. So serious. If I understood your question, that's my answer. Steve.
On the inspiration of this chapter.
Yes.
Verse 25, where he says, "Now concerning virgins, I have no commandment from the Lord, yet I give judgment as one whom the Lord in his mercy has made trustworthy."
Uh-huh. I think that may be an issue of opinion there when he says, "I have no commandment of the Lord," but I don't think earlier in the chapter that's what we're dealing with.
But the point being that God has made him trustworthy.
That's
to
right.
Say the things that he's saying, even though God doesn't give him a direct commandment on that particular item.
Okay, very good. Marvin.
In regard to Lee's question.
Everybody just try to remember to speak up so I don't have to run out to you.
In regard to Lee's question, if one reason for being married is to avoid fornication, then the answer to his question is yes.
Okay. Marvin says that if one of the reasons for marriage is to avoid fornication, then the answer to your question is yes. And I don't know if I can prove this, but I think I know of cases where one partner has withheld sexual intimacy, literally trying to drive the other one to divorce because they wanted out of the marriage but didn't want to initiate it because they didn't think that was scriptural. And boy, not only does that give me a headache, it makes me nauseous. I'm not avoiding you. Oh, I had one back here, yes. I just want to give everybody a chance. Go ahead. She said, "I made a comment about hugging," and she agrees with that, but what's that thing that kids go through about 13 when they don't want you to touch them? It's called puberty. And just hang in there. We'll get into a little bit on parenting next week, but it was Mark Twain that said, "When a child becomes 13, you ought to seal them in a barrel with one little knot hole that you feed them through, and then when they turn 16, just plug up the knot hole." Now, I don't know that that's real good parenting advice, but it is tempting sometimes, isn't it? Jay?
As opposed to all the what ifs, the bottom line is husbands should love their wives and wives should love their husbands. If they do, they're going to have the kind of relationship that Paul's describing.
Okay. And it's good to talk about some of these what ifs, but we could what if till September. So we got to kind of be a little patient with that. I lost my thought. But the responsibility of a mate to a mate is to make that mate happy. And Lee touched on that in his situation. And we have all five areas of responsibility: emotional, physical, spiritual, communications, and the first one. One more, Lee, and then we got to move.
Earlier you brought up Ephesians 5:28 and 29.
Yes, sir.
Along with the verses prior to that, as well as those verses, in 1 Peter 5 and 3, elders are restricted from lording it over the church. Do the scriptures you use in Ephesians 5:28 also restrict the husband from lording it over his wife?
I think the whole tenor of the Bible is the husband's never to lord over his wife, period.
If a husband thinks he can, what does that do to his qualification as an elder?
I think it disqualifies him. Well, that was easy.
But if
One more, ma'am, since you haven't had a comment yet.
You mentioned that you should talk.
Uh-huh.
But if nobody's listening, it doesn't do much good.
Okay. She said, I mentioned you should talk or communicate. And if no one's listening, it doesn't do much good. Yeah, if no one's listening, you're really not communicating. But I do think we have an obligation to try to communicate to people. If they choose not to listen, I don't know how to make them listen. But if my wife, let's just say my wife, or, let's turn that around. I just refuse to listen to her. And from right now on, I'm not going to listen to her. I still don't think that gives her the right to divorce me. Now that's tough. That's my opinion. And I knew we'd have trouble holding till next week on this. No, Dean. I want to talk on one other thing very briefly. And this is the concept of how we can destroy one another's spirit and one another's will in our relationships. I'm talking about what causes walls to get built between people. You know, you start out with this wonderful relationship, and then 10 years, 15 years, I don't know, there's just this wall, and you're not the same people. You're no longer communicating. We need to understand that some of the things we can do to our mates can wound them very, very seriously. And oftentimes things we do are not, we don't know that that's happened. We don't intend for that to happen. And this wasn't a serious wound, but it's just an illustration that occurred at our house. My wife likes cats. I don't. So we compromised. We got one. No, we compromised, but that wasn't the compromise. We compromised, but it's an outdoor cat. It sleeps in the garage, it mouses. In Missouri, we have mice. I doubt you have room for them out here. So it keeps the mice out of the house. So we got these two little kittens, and they would sleep in the garage. Well, it gets cold in the winter, so at night, when we'd pull the cars in the garage, they'd get up under the oh, you know where I'm going. Get up under the motor, the wheel, and stay warm. Well, God was looking out for me because they got under Donna's wheels, not mine. And she takes off to town. One of them's up there, apparently, and goes about a mile, and there's a stop sign pulling onto a highway. And apparently when she stopped, the cat jumped down. She didn't know it, and, you know, we had Pancake Cat there on the highway. And that wasn't the right thing to say. So it kind of closed her spirit. And I was sitting there saying, I know I shouldn't laugh, but I didn't have that much control, so I just went somewhere. The point I'm making is sometimes we don't mean to, but what we say can, and that was kind of a minor thing in the scheme of things, but what we say can really have an impact on people, and we can really close their spirits. And once you start closing the spirit of your wife or your husband, then everything you say is going to be exaggerated in their ears. Yeah, like saying it was a minor thing. We've gone